back in the night studio for the first time in quite a while is Dylan Mayhew, our mathematician. Kia ora, Dylan.
Kia ora.
Welcome back to Nights.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Now, you want to talk about something that you've covered before, and that is predictions.
Right.
Specifically, election result forecasts. Now, why? Why are you thinking about, well, we've got an election coming up, obviously, but, yep. I thought you dealt with this quite well a few years ago. Why is it still gnawing away there, Dylan?
Well, amazingly enough, it appears that not everybody got the message from our last conversation about this 4 years ago or so. I can't understand why. So I thought we might talk about it again, because this is a genuinely hard thing to understand. It's really confusing and it's really important. Like, understanding what a prediction means, what a forecast means, is important, but it's also hard. So I think it's a worthwhile topic of conversation.
What happened is that there are predictions about the election result for the presidential race in the United States back in 2016, and most predictions were that Hillary Clinton was going to win. Not Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump won. Now, he didn't win in terms of the popular vote. I think more people in America voted for Clinton than Trump. However, in terms of winning the Electoral College and the key votes in the key states, Trump did win, obviously. In fact, he won reasonably comfortably, if I remember rightly. And everyone said, you guys got it wrong.
And that's sort of what I want to argue against, because that is correct. People say the forecasts were all wrong. And I want to argue that they weren't really wrong in that sense. So
is this because of the kind of the narrative that I've heard from a few people? Is that, see, mainstream media, mainstream whatever opinion, doesn't take any notice of this stuff, so you can't trust what they say.
There's definitely a lot of cynicism underlying this idea that the forecasts were all wrong and there's no point in paying attention to them. In fact, the forecasts were good. Forecasts before the 2016 election were filled with useful information. We just didn't really pay attention to that information. So the forecasts were basically saying Donald Trump has a good chance of winning this election. Now, that's a little counterintuitive because, as you say, the forecasts said Hillary Clinton is more likely to win, but it's still possible for Hillary Clinton to be more likely to win and for Trump to have a good chance of winning. And that's exactly what the forecasts were saying.
Weren't those forecasts couched in terms of percentage likelihoods?
Exactly. Yeah, as most forecasts are. We're used to that from weather forecasts. They might say something like there is an 80% chance of rain. And if there is an 80% chance of rain, what the forecasts are saying is that rain is the most likely outcome, but a sunny day with no rain is still quite likely. A 20% chance is still quite likely. 20% probability is quite high. And that's what the forecasts were saying before the 2016 election.
It was, what, about 60%, 40% in favour of Clinton? 60% likelihood of Clinton? Am I remembering rightly?
Approximately, yeah. There was a spread of forecasts. Probably the most prominent forecast was the one from 538.com. So this is the prediction, the forecast led by Nate Silver, who started his career in sports prediction but has moved into politics prediction. And they had their model running for weeks and weeks before the election. And throughout that period of prediction, they always said that Clinton was more likely to win, but the likelihood of her win went up and down quite a lot, reflecting the instability in the race. Sometimes they put her at only 55% probability. On the eve of the election, they put her at 71% probability. But my point is, that's not very high. Now, if you're saying 71% probability of Clinton winning, you're saying there's a 30% chance of Trump winning, which is really saying Trump has an excellent chance of winning this election. That was the message we should have got from the forecasts, but I think a lot of people didn't hear it.
I think people hear 70% and they think that's very strong. I mean, the chances are one in, well, 7 times out of 10 it's going to happen this way. And that's the thing. When you say 70%, are you saying if this thing happened 100 times, if we could have a situation where you could run this event, whatever it is, 100 times, 70 times out of 100, it would lead to, if we have a 70% probability, 70 times out of 100, it would lead to the result A, if that's one which has 70% probability.
Yeah, so that's a very common interpretation of what a 70% probability means. But I sort of want to argue in for a different interpretation. So the interpretation that you're giving, where we repeat an experiment over and over again, is called the frequentist interpretation. And that is the interpretation where we repeat an experiment over and over again, and we tabulate the results, and that gives us a probability. But that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense when we're talking about a one-off event, like an election, or whether it's going to rain tomorrow. So what I want to argue for instead is the so-called Bayesian interpretation of probability, which is a lot more subjective, but I think more helpful for a prediction like this.
Bayesian. Is Bayesian named after a person called Bayes?
Named after the Reverend Thomas Bayes.
Reverend?
Yeah.
No less.
Apparently dabbled in probability.
Right.
Back in the 18th century.
That doesn't sound very Christian. Where's the faith in dabbling in probability?
Well,
Was he dealing with the probability of there being a God?
I don't know. Maybe.
Was he working on Pascal's wager or something like that?
I mean, probabilists have thought about religious matters.
I know
true.
They have. Yeah, they have, well and truly. Anyway, so what do they do? Do you know?
So what Bayesian probability does is it introduces subjectivity into the notion of probability. So a Bayesian forecast doesn't say, well, I'm going to repeat the experiment over and over again, which is, of course, impossible in the case of an election. What a Bayesian forecast does is say, look, I have a model on how to interpret data. That model is based on history. And I also have evidence which is coming in the form of polls and maybe the state of the economy and other fundamental issues. And based on those numbers that I'm putting into my model, my calculations, I'm going to come up with a level of probability for this event happening. But it's more subjective. It's more about saying, this is what I believe the probability to be based on my interpretation of history and my interpretation of current evidence, such as polls.
There's another thing in here, and that is uncertainty. See, you could argue that one of the reasons that predictions go awry is because the people making the predictions don't have all the information, do they? I mean, for example, let's go back to Trump and Clinton. Well, maybe when they did the polls consistently said people were voting more for Clinton than they are for Trump. The polls maybe didn't tell us whereabouts those people lived, or maybe they didn't give us an idea of how likely people were to vote, how motivated they were to go out and vote. Because if you're really motivated and you support Trump, and you kind of you don't know if you're going to bother, and you support Clinton, well, the motivated person's more likely to end up voting Trump, right?
Yeah, that's right. There is plenty of uncertainty in how people behave, and we don't have perfect information about how they are going to behave in the future. And that's why we have uncertainty, and that's why forecasts are not just 100% this is going to happen or 0% this is going to happen. It's why a forecast will say, well, I think this is most likely to happen, but I'm not very certain. They might say that about a prediction of 55% or 60%. Or if the evidence is better and they've got reason to believe that maybe we're getting closer and closer to the election, so that the data on voter intentions is becoming more and more nailed down, maybe they will reduce their uncertainty. And they might say something like, I think this person is going to win with 90% probability. That's a reflection of the fact that their uncertainty has decreased. The number has gone up to 90%. But there will always be uncertainty. You can't have certainty about predicting the future.
When, for example, 75% probability, could there also be a plus or minus in that? And in terms of how confident somebody making a prediction is about the data and saying, right, it's going to be 75% people will vote. Well, we could expect a vote of about 75% for X, say it's an election, plus or minus 10%.
Well, I think that's built into the 75%.
Right.
When they say, we think this person is going to win with a probability of 75%, they are factoring in their uncertainty. They're sort of factoring in that plus or minus, that noise you get from polling data and the uncertainty, and they're factoring it in, that they're baking it into the 75% already.
Okay. One of the issues about upcoming elections is, I guess, the trust that people do or don't have. And I'm curious about, say, when you're making an assessment of the likelihood of something, how do you go about, or how do you show to us that you have as much information as you possibly can, that you're not missing out any important parameters?
Yeah, that's important. The best forecasters are transparent, and they will say exactly what their model is. So that tells you exactly what information they are using and how much importance they place upon it. And the best forecasters, they will give you access to their code. So you can actually download the piece of code that they are putting their numbers into. You can run it yourself. You can look exactly what ingredients go in. That gives you some kind of certainty. The other thing is that as forecasters build up a history, you can start to compare their record. So if a forecaster has been making thousands and thousands of forecasts for years and years, you can look at their history of predictions with 75% probability. Now, those events should have happened about 75% of the time. If they happened only 50% of the time, then you might say, oh, your predictions are a little bit, you're overinflating your probabilities. Just as bad would be if those events that they predict with 75% probability, it would be just as bad if they happened 100% of the time.
As a mathematician, you can tell me, I'm sure, the chances of a result with a couple of dice in terms of the chances of getting two numbers.
I could do
it. Or some combination
of numbers. I could do a quick bit of arithmetic along those lines.
You can do that quite easily.
Sure.
But people aren't dice, are they?
That's true. There is more uncertainty built into that. The models for predicting an election or anything else based on people, those models are a lot more complicated than the models that we have for predicting the role of a dice. Predicting the role of a dice is something that we can teach to high school students.
The more complicated a model gets, the more likely it is to have some uncertainty?
I think that's a difficult question. The more complicated a model gets, the better it may be at making predictions. Or it may be that you're introducing too many variables into your model and you're introducing too many sources of error. So that's why you want to look at the entire history of a forecaster and look at their history of, say, 75% predictions to see that they really do happen about 75% of the time.
What was the name of the website, and I've forgotten it now, where people kind of bet against the probability
yes,
of something?
The prediction markets. Yeah. There are a few of them.
iPredict or whatever it was.
That's it.
And which sometimes maybe, I don't know, how did iPredict, if you look at the history of iPredict, is it quite good? Because there people are maybe dealing with the conversations they've had with people around them. They get a sense of a feeling in a community that they live in as to where people are going to go.
Yep.
And then we call it gut feeling, but it's actually probably our intuition and assessment of a situation. And collectively, when they do that, does that sometimes come up with a better result than mathematicians working with numbers?
I don't think it's that much better. I mean, prediction markets are not bad. I mean, the idea is of the prediction markets is that if you get enough people competing with each other to bet on outcomes, then the wisdom of the crowd will kick in. And even though those individuals might be making quite irrational assessments, together they will settle on something that's quite close to a valuable prediction. But I don't think prediction markets are considered to be notably better than the modellers and the forecasters.
When we're forecasting the weather, we don't forecasters run computer models. They might run them hundreds of thousands of times.
Indeed, they have very complicated models.
And that's what they do to then say there's an 80% chance. So they do run a model of reality.
Yep. And they're predicting a system that is very complicated, just like human politics is very complicated. Yeah, so that's why there is uncertainty built into weather forecasts.
As we watch the election campaigns, both here and overseas, then what are you looking for as a mathematician, in terms of predictions?
Well, what I might try and do is spend less time looking at the forecasters because I'm not sure it's very healthy for me to do so. I, at the 2016 election, I became a little obsessed, a little unhealthily obsessed.
Yeah, I think it still hurts a little bit.
Yeah, so I might try and limit my exposure to these forecasts a bit. But I can't go cold turkey completely. So I guess I would be looking for big movements in the forecasts. That's what happened immediately before the 2016 US presidential election. You might remember James Comey of the FBI released a letter, and that showed an immediate change in the polls. In the last New Zealand general election, there was a big shift in the polls after Jacinda became leader of the Labour Party.
Ms. Ardern, yeah.
Yep, indeed, yes. Exactly. And so I guess I might be looking for movements like that. That might reflect a real change in the situation on the ground. But I'm going to try not to look too closely.
Dylan, thanks very much for crunching the numbers with us, or at least talking about crunching numbers with us again.
Thank you very much.
Dylan Mayhew, our mathematician, he's from the Maths Department of Victoria University. Back with more numbers, possibly before the election in New Zealand? No, he thinks not. But I think probably before the one in the United States, I hope. Yes, he's nodding on that one.